Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
I'd like to take a moment here, if you don't mind, Chris.
It's your show, Rich.
I appreciate you saying
that. Yeah, no problem.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Roddy White told Big Lead, if I'm Trevor Lawrence, if the Jets finish with no wins, I just go back to Clemson.
Roddy White. Hush up! On this particular subject matter?
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles. Earlier on the show, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer. Coming up, Super Bowl champion quarterback, Trent Dilfer. Plus from Sports Illustrated, Pat Forty. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show on the air. I'm excited because I think Trent Dilfer makes me smarter every time I speak to him.
No doubt about it.
You know, I love the guy. I know he took a lot of grief when he was on the Worldwide Leader in Sports a couple times, where he said that the team with the, you can't win if your team scores less points or something like that.
He has fun with that now.
I know he does. Yeah. I just think he makes me smarter when he talks football and he talks quarterbacking and he talks about people that he knows as well, yeah. Like Tua. If I'm not mistaken, you tell me, Chris, because he's, again, Trent Dilfer is going to join us in about 25 minutes' time. We're about to take your phone calls at 844-204-RICH here on the show. I do believe he worked Tua out during the draft process.
He did.
That he had Tua in his building, in his midst.
Yeah, there were several videos of
right.
throwing passes.
Right.
We wondered, what's that voice in the background? Is that Trent?
Because these videos were put out to show when there's no pro days because the pandemic was just hitting.
Exactly.
And how does he look? And they put out videos that they made while Tua was working out in his own private workouts to put out there, show, look, guy can move around.
Yeah.
Trent was the guy running those workouts.
He was.
Trent's known him since Elite 11. Tua has now officially been named a starting quarterback in the National Football League. If anybody knows what Tua may have been showing inside that building and during practices to lead Coach Brian Flores to say to the team, we're going with Tua, and the coach feels comfortable with going with Tua and feels comfortable that they will be bought within the building despite Ryan Fitzpatrick's success, efficiency, and also leadership. Albert Breer on in hour number one of the MMQB saying that he believes this is what Brian Flores. You go, Brian Flores is one of the best young coaches at coaching players and knowing players and coaching up young players than he's ever seen. Trent Dilfer will know this. And there's so many other questions to ask Trent about other than Tua, other quarterbacks that are in the mix as well. And, you know, we have, again, Albert on before talking about this maneuver. And there's other quarterbacks I want to hit with Trent. Baker.
A lot of talk about Baker,
because
right
again,
now, man.
You know, we were discussing again throughout the week is who are you now? Can we really tell, you know, a team being good or bad? Dan Patrick was on Monday, thinks you can't really tell until like week 8, week 10 on that front. Yesterday, we were having conversations about, you know, you could pretty much tell who's good, who's not. The days bleed together. I forget, somebody was on yesterday where we had this conversation about on the subject. I think Kyle Brandt did say you could pretty. I was going to say we were towards the end of the conversation. I was going to say to them, who are the Browns? Who are the Browns? Blown out by Baltimore. Then they beat Joey Burrow, and then they beat Philadelphia and beat Jacksonville, right? And they wound up
blown out by Pittsburgh
and then they beat Baltimore, then they beat Joey Burrow. I was reading Cincinnati's line. Then they beat Washington. They had that great win at Dallas, which doesn't maybe look as good anymore.
Right.
They beat the Colts at home, and then they get blown out by Pittsburgh. So they're blown out by the two better teams in division, who are currently now in this poll question we're asking of who's the best team in the AFC through 6 weeks, and you need all, you must have 5 wins to qualify for this poll. Will we even learn, you know, if they beat up on Cincinnati?
That's what I mean. They beat up on the bad teams, and they get beat pretty badly by good teams, which means Indianapolis may not be as good as we think they are.
And, Don, let's get into some of these sound bites we got from the Cleveland Browns in our shoot here. Baker Mayfield talking about being 4-2. And, again, there are some impressive wins in the four. I mean, you still had to go down to Dallas and win that, and Dak was active. Boy, was he ever. Had to hold on for dear life to win that game. And they gave up a ton of yards running. I mean, I don't even want to get into the Dallas defense. We've already hit them pretty hard this week. And then, you know, that win against Indianapolis home. But beating the two losses are two hard losses against teams that you've got to be better than if you want a shot at having a home playoff game. This is what Baker had to say.
I'd say the feeling throughout the building after that loss, you know, 4-2 has never felt so much like 0-6 before. So, but that's because, you know, we have very high expectations for ourselves. So we're eager to get back to work and to get out there and fix the problems that we know are within our own control.
I mean, that's an interesting comment to say that they feel like they're 0-6. Yeah, it's a great way to look at it. You got to bounce back. I'll tell you what, if their 4-2 feels like 0-6, then the Jets 0-6 feels like 0-16. Right, if you want to correlate it out. And Odell Beckham is already back in the mix of talking about his maturity and whether people believe that he's acting appropriately on the sidelines. Who's saying that, by the way? I don't know why this is a topic of discussion, but this is what Odell Beckham had to say.
I'm pissed, and at this point, I really don't care to keep trying to make myself look like a good guy into the world and all that, because I am who I am. I got pulled out of the game. The coach said this was the best decision. You know, we're going to – it's 8 minutes left, and for me, I'd rather take my ass over like a man. I'd rather take my win the same way. I want to be out there to the last whistle competing. I'm kind of over, you know, trying to play the right thing because, you know, I love them to death, but there's people who have plenty of rings and consider the GOAT, and they do things on the sideline, and other people do things on the sideline, and they get away with it, and it's classified as passion because they may have something behind their legacy or whatever it is. And to me, well, we love it that much. It means that much. There's no way around it. I don't care if I have 0 rings, 12 rings, 20 rings. I love this game of football, and I'm not going to keep doling myself to for the world to feel like I'm mature or whatever word you would like to throw around it. I'm always going to be me, and tired of losing to good teams, and just ultimately want to win.
Now, I mean, the being me is him taking off his cleats and his helmet. When he was removed from the game with 8 minutes to go, he said he wanted to take his ass whooping like a man. And I think he's referring to Tom Brady, if I had to guess. That Brady has...
Sounds like it.
That Brady airs out players and he is angry and what have you.
Tom Brady's earned that, right?
I think so. Hey, man, Browns need number 13.
But does number 13 need the Browns?
No, he doesn't. He could move on to somewhere else, I think. Absolutely, if he wants to. Or he, do you think 13 is the reason why the Browns lost that game?
Nope.
They need him. They need him. And they need him being him, too. And Jarvis Landry says he's banged up. He's playing with cracked ribs, you know? I mean, that's why I'm wondering who they are. I think they're a better coached team. I think they're a better coached, better rostered team that got hit in the mouth and got steamrolled. They're not as good as the Ravens and the Steelers.
Right.
They might be a 6 or a 7 seed that you know, that for their sake, I hope they make the playoffs. Certainly if you're going 4-2 and you can't make an expanded playoffs, if you're 4-1 and you can't make an expanded playoffs, that's a problem. And then you do blow it up. Then you do start from, you do figure something else out. But there's a lot of time between now and then. I love Odell. I think, you know, if he wants to you know, if it does upset him that people call him into question and call his maturity into question, there are ways to be upset about being removed from the game without ripping your helmet off and taking your shoes off. I mean, I've never seen Brady do that. But this also doesn't strike me as a guy that is concerned about what people, you know, that he won't. He does is concerned about what people think of him, but he doesn't change his actions to prevent people from saying the stuff about him he doesn't want to hear said about him and say that he doesn't care what's said about him.
Right.
Otherwise, you're not handing out cash to kids on the field in wide open camera space, you know, to players after they win a college football game. I mean, you know that's going to draw attention, as will taking your helmet off and taking your shoes off.
Well, let's play this out for the rest of the year. Let's buy stock for the rest of this football season on the teams that Cleveland is in front of. Cleveland is the sixth seed in the playoffs if
okay.
they started today.
Yes.
Are you buying stock in Cleveland over Indianapolis?
Oh, boy. Good question. I will. How does that sound? I'll do
okay.
that.
They do own the tiebreak against Indy from winning
right.
a couple weeks ago. What sure. about the Raiders?
What about the Raiders? I just saw during the commercial break my colleague Tom Pelissero saying that they are genuinely the NFL and NFLPA concerned that Trent Brown, who was tested positive for COVID-19, was not regularly wearing his tracking device, and that there's video.
Oh,
as you know, as you know, and I'm serious, like you, and I know you're talking football, but
right.
this is significant.
Right.
This is significant. Football, you cannot talk about the NFL. You cannot talk about football this year without COVID. And I know we want to, you know, forget about it or get lost without it. But when the right tackle of the Las Vegas Raiders tests positive for COVID-19, a week in which they're on Sunday Night Football against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Players Association and the NFL finds out, looks at, as you know, we had Dr. Alan Sills, the chief medical officer, on the show. When somebody tests positive, they go to videotape to see what's going on in the facility because the cameras are everywhere, so they could figure out where were you masked up, where were you not masked up, even though you're kind of supposed to be masked up, if you're inside and you're outside, who's been around you, so they can test to see who's around you, contact trace to see who's around you, so they can separate those who need to be separated and then don't separate those who are not within close contact with of you based on CDC guidelines of 15 minutes within 6 feet. Indoors, outdoors, you need that information. And if you don't have that information because somebody's not wearing their friggin' device, and the yeah. video shows what Tom Pelissero is saying, may not be wearing masks around each other when you're supposed to, then you can't contact trace and you can't figure this thing out, and then you can't play a football game. And if this is true, that now means twice, where they went to Darren Waller's event, some of them not masked up, indoors,
right.
out of the building, and now something like this. I want to just take a beat and basically say, when you're asking me, do I want to take the Raiders, football-wise, you bet. You know how I feel about them, and this is not just biased because I love Mayock, but they've got a thumper on the back end who might not be playing this week, and Jonathan Abram, and they got a thumper at the running back position, and they've got a quarterback who's been playing excellently, and they got a thumper at tight end. So if we're just talking football-wise,
yeah, football for now, yeah.
I would take the Raiders over the Browns, but I have no idea what the next couple of weeks are going to be for the Raiders, and I hope I'm wrong, and I hope nothing has to do with that. They can figure out what's going on there in that building right now as they're practicing without their starting offensive lineman. Knock on wood, if you're with me.
What about the Dolphins?
Oh, man.
Who are you buying for the rest of the year?
I can't do that. Right? Like, if I have to do that right now,
yeah.
I would take Cleveland. But I need to see what Tua's looking like. I would. Can I? This is like, I'll move the chess piece, but I'll keep my finger
keep
on it.
Keep your finger on it?
Not hit the clock?
How about the Patriots?
I'd have to take New England over Cleveland just because Cam is Cam, and the way they looked in the last 2 weeks could just be a total outlier, and that's... that's the hoodie we're talking about, man.
The hoodie.
Those are your teams in the hunt right now.
But I'll tell you again, I don't know who they are.
Right.
Yet.
Nope. I think that's fair.
You can't sit here and say, oh, you know what? Odell's taking his shoes off, his helmet off. They got their asses kicked by the two teams in the division that they have to be chasing. But they still beat the teams that they're supposed to beat, and including one that, at the time, not the one in Dallas. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Let's go to Rishi in Florida, hanging on the longest here. Did I get that name right?
Yes, you did. How are you?
What's up, sir?
So, to answer your question, I think it's obviously a tough question. That's why you had to put it out there. I think ultimately it comes down to the Titans and the Chiefs. But the reason I voted Titans was because I think they're really underrated. And the way they shut down Buffalo a couple weeks ago was amazing. Also, last year, Tannehill, amazing comeback player of the year. People were like, oh, that's a fluke. Tannehill, Derrick Henry carried him. All he did was play action. This year we're seeing it again, though. 14 touchdowns, 2 picks, and he's led them to 5-0. And the reason I didn't vote the Chiefs was because with Brian Hoyer playing on that Monday night game that had to get rescheduled, that they struggled. They took them all the way to the fourth quarter, put them away. And then I don't know how good the Raiders are yet. And they had a tough schedule, but they beat the Chiefs. So I think for that reason, I had to vote the Titans.
All right. Thank you for that. It's a very well thought out, very properly reasoned opinion that you bet that you could have. And thanks for the call. A running back and a quarterback on that team split an MVP vote because Tannehill and Derrick Henry have been dynamite. Coaches, three-dimensionally next level. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind looking at the video of that game against the Houston Texans that, and also I guess he did it a couple years prior too. There's no doubt in my mind Mike Vrabel, instead of burning a timeout to stop the clock, purposefully sent a 12th man on the field to take a 5-yard penalty on a down and distance that he knew his defense odds were going to give it up. Might as well just save the 40 seconds of clock time right there, start from a 1st and 10, and save the timeout for later on. And there's no doubt in my mind that's what he did. No question. And defensively, they added Clowney. You could absolutely make the case the Tennessee Titans are the best team in the AFC, and I wouldn't. I think you could make an excellent argument for all four. But you know, I don't know how you can basically say, well, one team's overcoming the COVID in Tennessee, and you know, and you could say, you know, Tennessee overcame the whole COVID stuff, and Buffalo did not. In the same way that certain teams were able to handle the bubble in the NBA and other teams weren't. That's just the way it's going to go this year. Some teams are going to have trouble getting together on the fly and others won't.
Yeah.
New England flew the day of the game and had, that was a game, it was 6-3 at half. Yeah. They held Mahomes twice they've held Mahomes
with no touchdowns
in the first half. I know, with a backup quarterback who,
with all due respect, is not game.
Forget how many timeouts he had left.
Right.
So, and then again, the Raiders to me are, I said it after they beat the Saints, they can be a problem for people. I don't even mention the thumper they've got on the defensive line. That Max Crosby kid,
yeah.
Renfro is tough. If Ruggs can start taking the top of the defense off by staying healthy and doing his part, this is a very good football team.
Yeah, football-wise, for the Raiders, it really comes down to Derek Carr. Like, is he on? Is he accurate? Is he hitting his spots?
And I'll tell you what, he was accurate and hitting his spots, and he was terrific against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
Terrific. That team could be a problem. They could win this football game on Sunday night as well.
Could.
But it is, again, I just want to say it's just a report that they're looking into it. I don't know if it's true or not, but if Trent Brown is walking around without his contact tracer, he's doing himself and everyone on that team a disservice, because if somebody does test positive for COVID, which is entirely possible, as we've seen, you got to give the information to the NFL to figure out with their health and safety group who's been around you, so we could figure out who needs to stay away, that this doesn't spread like wildfire and you don't miss games. Come on, everybody. Let's do it. Adam in Chicago, you're here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Adam?
Hey, Rich. How's it going?
How are you, sir? What's on your mind?
I'm doing well, thanks. So before I get into my answer, I got to say, from Tennessee, my parents both went to Michigan. So in other words, I love when you have Taylor Lewan on. You can't have him on enough.
I agree.
Really, really love listening to the show.
Thank you.
But I'm not going to go with the Titans.
All righty.
I've seen their defense enough. I hear you on Clowney. They have a lot of talent, but they are getting gashed by guys like Gardner Minshew, who's good. Deshaun Watson, also very good. But we're having four games come down to the last 2 minutes on one possession. Mm-hmm. I have to go with the Chiefs here. Even though their offense has been sputtering, and that's cause for concern, I don't think there's a single team that's absolutely looked like they've been in control. The Chargers were the closest, but the Chargers are still missing a lot of pieces. I think this is a team that only built up on their offense. They've added Le'Veon Bell. They got Chris Jones under wraps. They still have Matthew playing great on defense. I don't see how this team doesn't have the experience winning, and until they really prove that they've fallen apart, I don't see how this they have to be the best in the AFC right now.
You know what? You're not wrong. That's who I voted for in this poll is the Chiefs right now through 6 weeks. I mean, they have that's who I have chosen because Mahomes is a difference maker, and Andy Reid and Mahomes is a difference maker together. And I appreciate the call, sir. They get better and better each week, even though they lost to the Raiders. Can't be perfect. But pump the brakes on Le'Veon Bell, right, Chris?
I would say so. Mm-hmm. Can we see him play first before we're declaring him an all-pro again?
I'm not declaring him an all-pro. I'm not. I'm just declaring him an active ingredient in the Chiefs' success. That's what I will call him. He will be an active ingredient in the success of the Kansas City Chiefs.
We'll see.
Oh, my gosh. Could you imagine? They're going to split him out wide. Can you imagine they're going to put him in the backfield at the same time with Clyde Edwards-Helaire? And then maybe run, you know, Tyreek Hill in one of those, you know, zipping around the back of everybody, arcing around the back of everybody, you know? Like Tinkerbell goes over the Disney castle.
Tinkerbell.
It was like that, like arcing with the glitter right behind him because you got to pay attention. And then you don't know where they're going, and then all of a sudden they're going to Disney World.
The wonderful world of kids.
Telling you, man. Can you imagine what fun it must be when Brett Veach calls up Andy Reid. Andy, it's done. Okay, cool. And they walk into the meeting room. Okay, guys, we've signed Le'Veon Bell. What do you think we should do? Come on. How fun would that be to be in a room, that room, and we all geek out on X's and O's and all 22s and stuff like that. But with those football minds, Bieniemy, Reed, the rest of that offensive staff, they got Mahomes and Hill and Edwards-Helaire and Kelsey and Watkins when he's healthy and Mecole Hardman and Pringle. I mean, like, right? And Robinson and all of those guys. And okay, now here's what we got. Le'Veon Bell. What are we going to do with him? What a laboratory to be in at that point in time. And you think you need to see something first.
Because I don't know what you've seen from Bell in the last two and a half years. Okay. It makes you think that he's just going to walk out there and be amazing.
Because what I've seen from him the previous years where he was greater than amazing, you can't fall off that much. The dude has very low mileage on his body.
Let me just flip the script on you.
In the NFL, the end comes quick.
Let me just flip the script on you.
Very quick.
Let me just flip the script on you.
His end didn't come because of his – sorry.
No, it's okay. We just have to hit the break here. But let me just flip the script on you real quick. You want to take stock in Le'Veon Bell?
Okay.
Right now?
Or
– not Le'Veon Bell. You taking stock in him or not?
I'm going to short Le'Veon Bell.
Oh, boy.
I don't know what that means, but it sounds disrespectful.
That means he's thinking the market's going to crash. That's what he thinks.
I'm holding on to it like Apple.
He's too talented.
844-204-RICH, number to dial. When we come back, the person we have a chat with is Trent Dilfer, who knows Tua inside and out. And then Pat Forty will join. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the show. We'll take more of your phone calls here on this busy football Thursday. Hey, football fans, are you an Amazon Prime member? Did you know that you can watch Thursday Night Football live on Prime Video? That's right. It really is the future of football because you can catch all the action on any device almost anywhere in the world. You can choose your favorite announce team, including Troy Aikman and Joe Buck, or Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah from Move the Sticks, or Chris Long and Carrie Champion from NFL Next. Get next-gen stats, too. Watch in-game replays on demand, all within Prime Video's X-Ray. Next-gen stats are real-time stats powered by AWS. No more waiting around. You can access the current stats anytime. Need to check how your fantasy player is doing? Well, this is the ideal way. Need to check how your fantasy player is doing? Well, this is the ideal way to stay up to speed. In-game on-demand replays are accessible on your remote, on Fire TV, or by turning your mobile device sideways. So, if you're a streamer or simply want the most custom way of watching Thursday Night Football, tune in live every Thursday starting October 8th. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. and kickoff is at 8:20 p.m. Eastern on Prime Video. Also available on Fox and NFL Network. NFL Network simulcast subject to change. Thursday Night Football is presented by Bud Light Platinum. Sunday at 3:30 Eastern, we're going racing at Texas Motor Speedway. The NASCAR playoffs return to NBC SN, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. And then on NBC Sunday Night Football, we're knocking on wood here that the Raiders are going to be COVID-19 free, that the tracing process that the NFL is on right now is, with the Players Association, is going to be successful. And that Sunday night between the Raiders and the Buccaneers goes off as scripted, as planned. Albert Breer was just on the program. Pat Forty will be joining us as well to talk about college football. The Big Ten returns to action this weekend, so we wanted to get prepared for that with Pat and talk football all day, as we've got ourselves a week 7 tonight on Fox and NFL Network and Amazon Prime between the Eagles and the Giants. And here to talk about all of this right now, as we're back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, is my buddy, who I've known forever and a day, and I love chatting with him. He makes me smarter, and he is Trent Dilfer. How are you, Trent?
What's up, Rich? Thanks for having me, buddy.
You got it. Thanks for coming on. So you're my Tua whisperer, Trent. You're the one who came on the show the day after he looked off the safety to beat Georgia. You told me just how special this kid is, that he's one of the most special you've ever been around. Now that he is named officially a starter in the NFL, I wanted to give you a call. And tell me what you think, or what you might know, Tua has shown behind the scenes to get this gig in the manner in which he got it. Trent, what do you think?
Well, I think very similar to his freshman year at Alabama, when he really wasn't going to play. But every day in practice, you feel it. You know, it's one thing to watch it on tape. It's one thing to watch it on TV, and then you feel it. You feel the horsepower. You feel his presence. You feel his command, the way he interacts with coaches and teammates. Now he's had 7 weeks to kind of sit back and learn from a lot of Fitz's mistakes, learn from Fitz's successes, learn how to handle a locker room, learn how to adapt to NFL lifestyle. All that along with him going out to practice every day and shredding it. I think it's a pretty easy decision. It's good timing. You know, I'm always from the school of sitting a little longer than maybe necessary. But he's had a year to heal his hip. He's strong physically. He's strong mentally. He's got a grasp of the playbook. I think the timing's good, and I think he'll play well. I don't think he's going to light the league on fire, but I think he's going to play really well. And the good thing about Tua is he's not going to flinch. When there are setbacks and things don't go his way, when he gets crushed by the media, or whatever adversity comes his way, it's not going to make him flinch. He'll move forward and learn from it and get better next time he goes out there.
So, I was presuming that he had to have shown something. Something had to have been shown, because not only did they make this decision when the team's 3-3, but it's also obvious from when you watch the Dolphins play how much they love playing with Ryan Fitzpatrick as well, and how they have been playing well of late. This had to be something that's sold within the locker room as well. And that's why I wanted to give you a call, to give people a sense of what you think they did in fact see behind the scenes.
Yeah, and this is a thing. I don't know anything. So I don't know any specific examples what happened in the locker room. I know that players love playing for Fitz. I know that coaches love preparing with him because he's a preparation junkie. So if that's the case, and they're still going to make Tua the starter, then you got to assume that Tua is doing the same stuff. But Tua also is beloved by his teammates, so he's respected by the work ethic he's showing. And then it comes down to, okay, where's the ceiling then? And we watch one guy throw it around in practice, and we watch the other guy throw it around in practice, and it just feels different here. It sounds different. And you look at your ability, how you're going to beat these teams that you face in the rest of your schedule. Like, oh, the quarterback's going to have to make some explosive plays, and this guy's a, you know, Tua's a walking explosive play, waiting to happen.
So, how do you think it will look different coming out of the bye when the Dolphins uncork this against the Rams of all teams, too? I mean, that's Aaron Donald that's across the line of scrimmage and a Rams defense that has been playing very well under a first-year coordinator. How do you think it looks? It's going
to
look.
I think you'll see some college RPOs. I think one way to block Aaron Donald is to not block him all the time. You know, put him in space and make him question whether it's run pass, get the ball out quick. I think you see a lot of screens. And then I think you'll see max protection shots. With a young quarterback, especially a guy like Tua that's as twitchy as he is, there's a lot of stuff you can do in the quick game to get the ball out of your hand quick, protect your offensive lineman, get the ball on the perimeter, get the ball in space. And then, you know, if you want extra protection, load some people in there and push the ball down the field. He's as good a deep ball thrower, and I think everybody knew this from his time at Alabama. It was no secret. He throws the ball downfield as well as any quarterback I've ever seen. His accuracy on, you know, 30 to 45-yard throws is ridiculous. So you'll take advantage of that, and I think you'll see the Dolphins, you know, flood one side of the field with multiple receivers down the field, max protect, and try to steal 3 to 4 plays a game in the vertical passing game.
And then before we move on from Tua, Trent Dilfer here on the Rich Eisen Show, knowing him as you do and knowing his journey, knowing his family as intimately as you do, what did you think of when the photograph hit social media of him sitting in his uniform on the 15-yard line after he did get that cup of coffee against the Jets, FaceTiming his parents? What did you think of, Trent, when you saw that?
I thought it was really cool. I thought of actually the first time we sat in my office getting ready for the draft and getting ready for the combine prep, and he was broken. I mean, he was broken physically and mentally. It was hard. He handled it so well at Alabama, going through the injuries and supporting his teammates, but just the attention he had on of being Tua. You know, the burden it is of being Tua in Alabama, going through the injuries, with the injury of the hip especially, is catastrophic. The disappointment, the overwhelmed feeling, like it was, I knew right then and there that we had some pieces to pick up and kind of rebuild this thing. And I know how hard he worked. To his credit, I don't know if you can work harder than Tua worked. I don't know if anybody has the capacity to work harder than he worked in the time we had him here. Lonely, hard, painful. You know, those are two different things. It wasn't just hard emotionally and mentally, but it was painful. I mean, it hurt his body to come back. He was away from his family. The tornado hit. I mean, just a lot of adversity. I think that sitting on the middle of the field, FaceTime his parents, was like, it's worth it. You know, that's what I took away from it. It was all worth it so I could get here. And I think he'll play that way, too. I think you'll see a lot of gratitude, appreciation, joy. Joy would be the word. Like, true, true joy. Because he may not be happy sometimes. He may throw some pick sixes. He's not going to be real happy. But I do think you'll see a joyful player, a guy that just appreciates the fact that he has this opportunity and can reflect on all the hard stuff he went through.
Now, when you say your office, you're talking about in the state of Texas where you're coaching, and also
Tennessee, baby.
Oh, Tennessee. Is it Tennessee? Okay, so yeah. It was the state of Tennessee, and a broken, huh? Because, I mean, when we saw him at the Super Bowl, he was happy-go-lucky. It seemed like, you know, he's at peace with the decision of him getting ready to go to the pros. But you're saying as he's getting ready to start the process of showing what he can do medically, spiritually, physically, he was broken. Is that what you're saying, Trent?
Just beat down, exhausted. Huh. It was a tough journey. And I think, you know, getting some insight to what happened towards the end there at Alabama, you know, just watching his team go out there. I think he felt like I should have been out there with him. Again, I never try to put words in people's mouths, but that's the impression I got, was that it was just hard. It was hard mentally. It was hard emotionally. It was hard physically. And he shows up and he knows he's got another hard journey getting ready to get ready for the combine, the draft, and his rookie season. And, you know, we really had to get him going and excited about doing it all over again. To his credit, he did. He didn't flinch. He kept pushing forward. And and getting through the hard stuff.
Trent Dilfer, for a few minutes left with him here on the Rich Eisen Show. Earlier this hour, we were talking about the Browns at 4-2, and really, who are they? Their two losses are hard losses to the two teams that are sitting in front of them in the division. They've got some impressive wins. The win in Dallas when Dak was obviously still healthy against Indianapolis at home. What do you make of Baker Mayfield's development so far now that he's a few years into his professional career, Trent?
I'm not overly impressed. I think, you know, everybody that, watch this, you got to call the game around some of his limitations. He is much better under center than the shotgun. He's much better when you can control his rhythm. He's much better when you cut the field in half and kind of have either-or passing decisions. And I said this early on. I mean, I like him. I think he can be a really good player. He just needs to be developed a certain way. And his mind rates checks his body can't cash. And I've used that with a few other guys before, meaning that he thinks he's a playmaker. And athletically, he's just really not. He's a very average athlete from the quarterback position. So because of that, he needs to play the game on time. He needs to play it on schedule. And then at times, if he's going to try to extend, try to create, it needs to be up, not out. So you make him a lot of mistakes when he's moving out, especially when he goes left. And then I think he's also lacking some physical confidence where he just doesn't feel like he can sit in there and let him get through a progression, deep into a progression from the pocket. So he rushes things. And when he rushes things, he makes mistakes. So I think it's all about identifying the things he needs to get better at as a coaching staff and going to work on those things. They're all correctable. They're all things that can, if he fixes.
We just lost Trent right there. So let's put him back on hold and try and get him back on the horn. Trent, you there? We lose him?
You didn't Trent? Lose me. My cheek pressed mute. I'm sorry.
I think Baker wanted you to have your cheek pressed mute on what you were saying about him, Trent.
Where did I leave off? I apologize.
It's all good, man. No, you were basically saying that. So do you think, let me just rephrase this, and then we can move on to a couple more of the quarterbacks and go. You can go on the rest of your day there at Lipscomb University where you're the AHC. So, is Stefanski coaching him up in the manner in which he needs to be coached up?
I do think he is. Okay, I just think he needs to be a constant. And my roots here from Mike Holmgren, where every week the offensive staff would have to evaluate the progression and the development of the quarterback. I think that's really important. You can't let that slide a week. He touches the ball every play of the game. He's the most important player on the football team. You've got to make sure you're crossing your T's and dotting your I's on every little piece of his development. I think they have the answers on that staff. They just got to be on top of it. Baker can't be overly sensitive each week when they're making corrections and saying, hey, you need to play this way. But if he buys in, I mean, I've seen this with Matthew Hasselbeck. Matthew bought in. He bought in and knowing he had to change the way he played. He couldn't play like Brett Favre. He needed to play like Matthew Hasselbeck. And when he did that, he became a multi-Pro Bowl type player. I think Baker can do the same stuff. So this isn't harsh. This is the reality of this position. How'd you like to be my quarterback in high school? We have these conversations every day. It's not really about your feelings. It's about your development. And I think Baker needs to put his feelings over a little trash bag and not worry about them and go to work on getting better. And the staff needs to be all hands on deck and making them get better.
A few more minutes left here with Trent Dilfer on the Rich Eisen Show. Jets are in the pole position for Trevor Lawrence, but they've got Sam Darnold, who's coming back, it seems. He's back at practice after suffering a shoulder injury. I said on my show the other day, Trent, that I think the Jets have officially broken Sam Darnold. Is that too harsh or is that accurate? What do you think?
I think he'd be put back together. I think he has value as a tradable player. I think there's teams like New England, Washington, the Saints, that would put a lot of value in what he is as a player, as an athlete, and that would feel like they could develop him better than he's been developed to this point. I would say he's broken if he stays in New York. So I'd agree with you. If he stays in New York, it's just, you know, that place will eat you alive if you're not having success. And I think he hasn't had enough success to get the belief of that fan base and the how he's been coached and the lack of success they've had. It'd be tough to overcome that. But I do think he's got some trade value and, you know, I'm assuming they're going to clean house at the end of this year, and probably wouldn't be bad to start over Trevor Lawrence to do coaching staff.
Well, I mean, what advice would you give Trevor Lawrence? I'm already hearing some people out there in the public domain say that Trevor should stay put, sort of pull an Eli Manning like he did in San Diego and say, I'm not coming if you draft me. Would you give him that advice?
Well, I'd give him this advice. You probably have Archie Manning's phone number. Call Archie. Archie knows more about this than me, you, all your guests put together. Archie's lived this with two of his sons. They've had to walk through this process. And I think Archie could lead Trevor the right direction on this decision-making process. Me and you both know deals are made at the Combine every year. They're kept quiet so ratings aren't affected. This is something that could get done at the Combine behind closed doors, be held until draft day. And I think everybody can get their way out of this, but I'd let Archie Manning be the puppet master on this one.
Didn't think that would be your answer, Trent. That's a fascinating answer. That
done it with two of his kids.
I don't know. I don't know if he's smoking a cigar in the back room somewhere, but yeah, gosh, it sure looks. There's a lot of football between now and then, but it sure looks like the Jets are going to be in that position. I would be remiss before letting you go without asking you about Carson Wentz, who's going to be on display tonight, Thursday Night Football, 1-4-1. The conversation is that he's regressing and that Jalen Hurts waits in the wings. What is your evaluation of that situation, Trent?
I will say this. I love the way he competes. He may be regressing here or there, try to make too many plays, try to make up for a lack of talent. But if you're going to compete as fiercely as he competes and make those mistakes, and I want you. I think a lot of teams do. I think he's a guy that's revered around the league because of how he competes. He's got a lot of Brett Favre in him. And as they kind of start surrounding him with better talent, I think you're going to see his career skyrocket. I think he believes that every play is the most important play in the history of the universe, and he's trying to win it. And I admire that. It's going to lead to some mistakes.
Right.
It's going to lead to some losses. But boy, it's hard to question a guy's soul when he's competing as hard as he competes and the rest of the league takes notice. I mean, I don't know of a quarterback in our fraternity that has a bad thing to say about Carson. Like, we'll criticize some of the decisions because we've all made the same knucklehead mistakes. And we, you know, learn later how not to make them as often. But boy, every quarterback watches him play just goes, wow. I mean, that kid is competing his tail off. And there's a lot to be said for that. There is a lot to be said for, I think, of Kurt Warner when we went to the Giants. He wasn't the MVP Kurt. He was a Super Bowl Kurt, but he was as a competitor. They weren't as good. But boy, did he compete. And every single week you would watch him and you'd be like, okay, I mean, that's just a special makeup there. I think of Carson Wentz the same way.
And I guess I lied. One last one. You had a front row seat to Tannehill there in Tennessee, Trent. We had Tannehill on Monday. He's just been dynamite. I mean, his mastery of what the offense that's been he's been put into, it seems like it's perfect, and he's excellent at it. It helps to have Derrick Henry, sure, but he's looking terrific, Trent.
Hold tight, yeah, and I'll keep this quick. I think there's a parallel here to your favorite team, or Sam Darnold especially. The Titans are special. Mike Vrabel needs to go on the list of best coaches in all of football. He has a great staff. They're a three-phase football team. Tannehill's playing great. I mean, he's got MVP numbers over his 15 starts in Tennessee. So not enough good things to say. But I would say the same breath, there's no reason Sam Darnold can't be Ryan Tannehill. Very similar backgrounds, limited starts in high school, limited starts in college, tough first situation, need to be rebuilt, find the right home, dominate. So before people start writing off quarterbacks that are super talented like Ryan Tannehill and Sam Darnold, I think Ryan's shown a lot of people, and there's other quarterbacks that have done this before as well, given the right environment, getting the right support cast, getting the right training, team identifying what you do best and doing it often, can rejuvenate a guy's career, and I look for that to happen to Sam as well.
Love you, Trent Dilfer. Best to your family. Thanks for the call, always.
All right, thanks, buddy.
That's Trent Dilfer right there. What does Tannehill and Darnold have in common?
Adam Gase.
Oh, okay. Just write that one down so I don't forget it. Where's my pen?
Well, don't write it down, Rich. Look around for it.
one thing that Trent said that I will just take and discard. Discard.
Burn and turn.
After the break.
Oh.
Including also an insight into Tua having a great day at the Super Bowl and maybe deep inside wondering about his future, but still having a great sense of humor. That's coming up. Old Spice now has Below Deck, a new line of products for your, well, below deck area. New Below Deck Powder Spray helps you feel drier and cleaner down below. New Below Deck Anti-Chafe Stick helps prevent inner thigh chafing. Nobody wants that. Available in the family planning aisle at Walmart or online at walmart.com/Old Spice Below Deck. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. YouTube.com/Rich Eisen Show. Check out all of our videos. We appreciate we're everybody hitting that subscribe button. We're well over 200,000 subscribers on our YouTube page.
Yeah. Love it.
We're about to pull something straight off the YouTube page as well.
Ooh.
Rip, talked about it quite a bit the last couple of days. We figured let's throw it out there. We'll at 844-204-RICH is the number to dial as well. Trent Dilfer had something that he just said that I wanted to touch upon. Because I do trust Trent. I do like Trent. And he made a very interesting point, but one that I don't think will ever happen in a million years. And our radio audience is about to rejoin us. We're, as you know, a triple cast every day here on Peacock, NBC Sports on Peacock. And we're back here on our Rich Eisen Show radio network. Trent Dilfer just joined us. Makes you smarter. He pointed out that Darnold would have a good spot in terms of what somebody could pull out of him and what they can do in their system and have trade value. A couple teams that he mentioned, New Orleans Saints. That would be interesting. Sam Darnold down there. It would be a great going away present. Sorry for almost destroying your career, Sam. Here you are with Sean Payton. Look how that worked out for Drew Brees. Congratulations. Enjoy the gumbo. That would be a nice thing. One of the other teams he mentioned, not on this green earth. In fact, even if a very warm place froze over, there's no chance the Jets would strike a deal for Sam Darnold with the New England Patriots. Not ever.
Not now, not ever, not yesterday,
not tomorrow. Even with the warmest place you could think of freezing over.
No, you don't think so?
No.
Abu Dhabi?
No. No place.
Qatar?
You could name keep naming warm places.
Hell? Egypt?
Oh, my God.
Mike,
well, it's warm there.
Yeah, I know, but that we're...
So I've mentioned this piece of video a handful of times this week because Tua has leapt to the forefront of this week because he has been named the starter of the Miami Dolphins. And so much has been made of who he is as a person, how infectious he is and how delightful he is and how funny he is. Somebody mentioned that, right, this week? Somebody said he is a funny guy. He's got a sense of humor. And he's easy to root for. And we see his popularity. So we met him at the Super Bowl this past year in South Florida, where we all had an inkling it would be his future professional home. But he didn't really give any sense of that. And I asked him about being coached by Nick Saban and the most pissed off that this delightful human being had ever made Nick Saban. And I want to play this for you here. What's the most pissed off you made Nick Saban ever?
Oh, when I took the sack second and 26 in the national championship.
That game? Yeah. You mean the one that you immediately made up for with an amazing play put you on the map?
Yeah,
That sack?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the sack.
So walk me through how that, what he said to you, if you can, in a certain way on a live radio TV broadcast.
I mean, I could only see it on camera, you know, how mad he was. That was probably the most pissed off, though, I think he's ever been at me. He was squeezing his headset so hard. And then, you know, like, It was hard because the emotion was like so mad to so happy, you know, so fast for him. And, you know, we got into the locker room when everything settled down. I mean, he was still the same coach, you know, yeah. He pulled me to the side. Like, what were you thinking, you know?
So like taking after, after you won the game and you picking confetti out of your hair, he still took a moment moment to revisit that sack.
Yeah, being who he is, I mean, you know, he pulled me to the side and he said, you know, well, why did you take the sack?
Right.
You know, and I thought it was a good time to joke with him, you know, so I mean, we won the national championship, so I told him, well, you know, we needed more room to throw the ball, coach. You know, and, like, he looked at me, and, like, I was laughing. He's like, that's not funny. I didn't know what else to do in that situation. I was like, okay, I'm sorry, coach. So I shook his hand, and he just moved on. I was like, oh. Like, oh, man.
That's amazing.
I love that story. Yeah. That made me my favorite story the whole week. So you just figured, yeah, hey.
I was like, yeah, oh, maybe. Just won it? Yeah. Thought it was a good time to joke, but it wasn't.
Wow. Yeah, nope. It's never a good time, I guess, in that respect.
Even funnier. I mean, even funnier so now, 9 months later.
I just figured we needed more room to throw, coach.
So good.
Shook my hand, moved on.
I mean, fantastic.
Oh, my gosh.
I do not love that guy.
Nick Saban.
Didn't care that they won. That's not funny, says Nick Saban. Let's take a phone call. Ryan in Tennessee, you're here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Ryan?
I want to start off by saying take it lightly, Ryan from Tennessee. I know where you're probably thinking I'm going to go with this, and you're absolutely correct. I would take the Titans as the best team in the AFC, and for a slew of reasons. You know, when I'm looking at a team that I think can make a deep playoff run, I'm not necessarily going to be looking at the team that just collects the blowout wins week after week. I find the teams that do well in the playoffs are the ones that have faced a lot of adversity in the regular season. The Titans with a 1-2-3-point win and the overtime victory last week, I think, shows a lot of adversity. And then you have to look at Kansas City in that game versus Las Vegas, where 0 points in the third quarter, getting outscored in the fourth. I think that can create a lot of issues when they go up against some of the better teams later on in the season. And just the way that the Titans fight until the game's over, I think that shows a huge sign that the players have really bought into the players' coach, Vrabel, and what he's creating over there. Just a young team that gained a lot of experience in the playoffs last year, beating the Patriots and then playing the Chiefs. I think you're hitting on it, Ryan.
I think you're hitting on it right there as well, is that they are not afraid of Kansas City. They are not afraid of Kansas City. And unlike, and thank you for the call. Appreciate that. You made some excellent points. Our callers made a great point, right? To use the Larry King phrase that we have here on our drop. The caller makes a good point. Thank you very much.
Give me a second.
They're not afraid. Now, Tennessee, as we know, got in as a wild card last year. Tennessee, like Pittsburgh, not on the Chiefs' schedule. Not on the Chiefs' schedule. We are going to be left guessing how that rematch goes until it may actually occur in January. And if it does, one team that will not be afraid of the Kansas City Chiefs and their high-flying offense, and one team that will definitely be leery of the opponent, are the Tennessee Titans and the Chiefs, because here comes Derrick Henry downhill. That will be just dynamite. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Pat 40 on college football, Big Ten season coming up.
Welcome to the MIP.
Yeah!
The Michael Irvin Podcast.
You knew this was coming.
Guess who?
Let me start this thing off. Join me every week for the Michael Irvin Podcast. We'll give you the full MIP experience. I'm talking everything from football to fashion. I will be chopping it up with playmakers, headline makers, and I am throwing haymakers. I'm the MVP of the MIP. Don't miss it.
Download new episodes of the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.